From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells.
Citizen scientists are becoming quite a useful tool for researchers all over the globe, and especially at Adventure Scientists in Bozeman, Montana, where citizens can help to collect data from the farthest reaches of the planet. But bringing it home now to the West and to Montana, where data collection is taking on a very interesting form, this time from the seat of a bicycle. Andrew Howley is the communications director at Adventure Scientists, where he came after spending 11 years at National Geographic. Why not go to Bozeman, Montana, after all, which has really become a little hotbed of science in the West? And Andrew will tell us all about it and some other projects happening at Adventure Scientists. Andrew, welcome back to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks, Lynn and John. It's great to be here.
Great to have you back. Well, for those of our listeners who don't know what Adventure Scientists is and what you all do up there in Bozeman, give us a little example, and maybe you could do that by telling us about your microplastic study and how you gathered the data.
Sure. It's no secret worldwide that the impact that humans are having on the world is enormous, and we're trying to do our best to lessen the negative impact and to manage all of our resources well and to really bring the human population and the wild into a really healthy balance going forward. To make the best decisions about how to do that, we have to be basing those decisions on science, on true understanding of the world and the way that it's interacting with different elements. So what conservationists often need is data, real observations, physical samples collected from around the world. As you know, as you picture a scientist in a lab trying to answer a question, they may not always have access to the skills that could get them to all of the places that they need to go, or the time to be able to visit everywhere that they would need a sample from. And so they're left there with an important question to answer and not always the resources to be able to answer it. What our founder, Greg Trinish, who's an adventurer and scientist himself, discovered was that the world is entirely peopled with people going out into these areas, and they're doing it for fun and recreation on their own time and on their own dime. And if we could connect the scientists with the adventurers, then those scientists would have access to all of those remote places that would be hard for them to get. And then the adventurers, in turn, would have a really great impact on the world by helping to bring back knowledge and information from these places that they go. That little chemistry there has been really fruitful and really helped advance a lot of things.
And it really stretches the research dollars so much further. As you say, the adventurers are footing the bill for their own travel. And what I love about this, and on your homepage of adventurescientists.org, it says it's got two tabs. Scientists, begin here. You click on that tab if you're a scientist, and it tells you what to do and how to match up with adventurers. And the other tab is adventurers, begin here. And, you know, many of us love to go on adventures and vacations. And say I'm going for a little mountaineering adventure in the Andes in South America. Mm-hmm. But I want to do the something more. How am I going to hook up with adventure scientists? And how are you going to train me to make sure that the data I gather is pure and good data?
Great. Well, yeah, the first thing that you need to do is exactly what you described. Go to adventurescientist.org and click for adventurers and see what opportunities are there. At any given time, we have some really specific projects that are zeroed in on specific areas, such as like a timber project where we're focused in the Pacific Northwest right now. But then there'll also be global projects like our four-year-long microplastic project, which was anywhere that you were by a body of water, you could collect a sample of that water, and then our partners would analyze it for the presence of microplastics. And so that was something that anybody going anywhere with water could participate in. And that's what we try to do, is keep a good balance of offerings for people so that eventually where we want to get is to anyone, anywhere going on an adventure can have a real impact on a science and conservation project by doing that. The way that we make sure that once you've found the project that's right for you and you're able to make a good contribution and do it well is through really careful planning with our scientific partners. We meet for months and have lots of conversations about what is the exact data that you're trying to get, you know, what is the most effective and efficient way for that data to be gathered, and then how do we train people really efficiently to be able to collect that data, because it's not like everyone can, you know, come up to Bozeman and be trained in person. So we develop a lot of online training courses with, you know, videos, photos, diagrams, everything teaching you how to maybe use a tool to collect a sample or how to use an app that's going to be used to record a photo and an observation. And so every one of our volunteers goes through, you know, hours of preparation and training before they even step out their door.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Andrew Howley. He's the communications director at Adventure Scientist. Lynn, I have a thought, and first of all, I like everything that you said, Andrew. You know, go to Adventure Scientists and find out where they are in this particular city you're going to. But I have another thought. When you go to another city, you may be thinking about, you know, you get into your hotel and you're rushing around, you're going to meet friends or you're going to go to a particular spot in this city. But to try to do it from a different perspective as sort of a curious observer, walk out of your hotel room and look around and try to figure out, you know, what are the birds in this city that you see and what are they doing and what's some of the plant life and what's going on there, and just to sort of be a more curious person. Andrew, what do you think of that?
That's absolutely right, John. I mean, the idea of being an adventure scientist or a citizen scientist or anything, it's really just having an eye open to understanding the natural world from a scientific perspective, right? Looking and seeing what things are present, how do they interact with each other, and how do you understand it? And that really is something that everybody can do everywhere, every day. And as you said, when traveling, it's a perfect opportunity, even if you're not expecting to, you know, go hiking into the hinterlands somewhere. If you've been really attentive to nature and the environment in wherever you were before, the minute you step out into a new place, even just a few hours away, sometimes just a few miles away, you'll notice those changes. You know, up here in Bozeman, we're right at the start of the Rockies, and we've got the plains out to our east and the Rockies to the west. And there's a lot of little nooks and crannies of different environments where you can just cross over a mountain and be in a really different environment. If you've been paying attention to what's around you, then you'll notice instantly, like those changes, just a few degrees of temperature difference, maybe, or the different amount of rainfall on the north and south side of a mountain, and the different amount of shade, and what that does to the plants, and what that does to the animals. And yeah, the more attention you're paying, the more you'll notice, and the richer your experiences, and then the better primed you are to participate in all kinds of other bigger projects that you may stumble upon.
Yeah, and I don't do it all the time. I try to do it. It's exciting when you do. I don't know the answers half the time. I'll look at a mountain. I'll see all these beautiful trees that are lined up perfectly, and then the tree line just sort of falls off to the eastern side or something. And I try to figure out, well, what happened there? It's a number of fun exercises, aren't they? Just being out there and just trying to see what's going on.
I'll tell you, it can come to you from anywhere. Also, I remember as a just out of college young adult and trying to save some money and not buying the brand name cereals, and I bought like a generic cereal, and as opposed to just having some kind of, you know, movie tie-in, the back of the cereal box just was a description of different kinds of rock. And I sat there, you know, eating my not-quite Rice Krispies and thinking, wow, there's so much to know, and I'm getting exposed to this understanding of geology that was nothing I ever took a class in, nothing I ever learned, and just through, you know, someone's decision to put this on a box of cereal opened my eyes to the differences of rocks and things that I could find just than walking around in my local woods that day. And it opens your eyes and just primes you to do stuff. And that is something that we find from our volunteers that they get excited about with this roadkill project or with our timber tracking project where people collect samples from trees. One of the most common refrains that we hear is, wow, this opened my eyes. I see things differently now. I have walked through these woods my entire life and just seen trees. And now I see four different species of trees. And I recognize what that says about the land that they're growing on and why these ones are here and why those ones are there.
What you're describing is kind of like the experience that somebody has the first time they look through a telescope and they see Saturn, for an example. It's a big deal.
It really is. It's the most wonderful thing is that it's a new way of seeing what's already around you. You don't have to go somewhere else. It's when you get this glimpse into another way of looking at things, you see the world that's already around you in a new way. So like with roadkill, that's one of the most interesting things that people have said is that, you know, you may say, why are we doing this on bicycles and not just driving around the state? Because you can see all, you know, you'd think you'd see all the roadkill just by driving down the road. What we found is that, and this has been proven with studies, someone on a bicycle moving slower, closer to the ground, closer to the elements, non-isolated from the elements like we are in a car, you engage your whole being and experience the world at a human scale, and that draws your attention to so much more detail. So people have always noticed as they drive maybe a deer that was hit, and they're like, oh yeah, a deer was hit. And then they'll drive that same or ride that same road on a bike, recording roadkill observations for our project. And they'll say, I never realized how many things were hit all the time, little things, small things, things that scurried back into the grass. And it's really eye-opening.
Yeah. What you're doing to create citizen scientists and broaden the curiosity of everyone is just, it's fantastic with adventure scientists. Not only that, but you're also contributing to the work of scientists and their research. And you know, the Ride for Roadkill project, when I found out about that, I actually chuckled out loud because my family lives in Montana and I drive up there and I got to make it in 9.5 hours. You know, there are no stops. You got to dehydrate yourself so you don't have to stop and go to the bathroom. But several years ago, I was driving up and it seemed like I kept seeing this roadkill. And I know this happens to everyone where you go, what was that thing? And so I started to stop to look at what it was. And I saw the most interesting things. You know, I think I saw a badger, which would be really rare. And, you know, just other things. But this is what the Ride for Roadkill project does, over 11,000 miles. And tell us about some of the things that are the most surprising that cyclists have found and photographed.
Yeah, well, to give that eagle eye view of the project. Again, this is a global project that we've had for several years where people can record roadkill anywhere that they see it in the world and upload the photo, tag it for the species. Maybe an expert will come in and tag the species because they'll be able to identify it when you couldn't. And it's really giving a good picture of, you know, kind of the presence. You know, like you said, you never would have seen the badger in the grass, but sadly, because it was hit, you were able to see it. So there does kind of become a window into the presence of species that we've been able to get just through kind of ad hoc, wherever somebody sees something, they can upload it. But then we realized that there was a real strategic value to having a more concentrated focus on a smaller area. So this year and for the next several years, we're going to be looking at Montana itself, riding more than 11,000 miles of road on with cyclists and documenting all of the roadkill that they see across the entire state with everybody participating during about a 10-day period four times a year. So we'll have these snapshots of what's happening on the road. How are our roads impacting the wildlife populations across the state and get it in all the different seasons and for years, sequential years, to really see what are the patterns that emerge. Everyone knows, you know, you do see deer, you know, large animals get reported to the Department of Transportation and whatnot. But all of the small things don't really. You can't even see them when you're moving 70 miles an hour down, you know, Montana highways.
Yeah.
And roads. So we're focusing on the state and county roads and getting this picture across the entire state. And then our partners at the Department of Transportation, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks will add this data to the data that they're already looking at to try to understand the impact of roadways on wildlife. And this new level of detail is just going to let them see it, again, open their eyes to more of the detail and be able to better understand the interaction of the roads and wildlife, and then make really well-informed decisions about how do we try to mitigate those mm-hmm. impacts. What can we do that will keep animals and humans safer on these roads by doing this? So on the one hand, it's great for participants as riders to become more aware of the wildlife around them and the impact of the roads. But then it's not just an inspiring, eye-opening story. It's real data that gets put into real practice, and it's helping our government agencies to make the best decisions that they can to keep humans and wildlife safer on the roads.
Right, like where to put wildlife fences and where to put wildlife bridges and all of that. So we've got to let you go, Andrew. It's been great talking with you, but I'm wondering if our listeners are sitting here in Park City, Utah, saying, you know, I've wanted to go up to Montana and ride my bike around the back roads. What's the schedule for these 4 weeks that you talk about? And how I mean, they'd go about it by going to your website and signing up, but what's the general information?
Right. Yeah, the general information is that we're doing it seasonally, basically, you know, in between the seasons of snow cover in Montana. So once the spring thaw happens, we'll have our first season, and we'll do it every couple of months to get four over the course of the year. Anyone who participates in one season kind of gets dibs at picking the section of road that they'll ride for the next one. We've divvied everything up into 50-mile chunks. So it's actually a 25-mile segment of road that you ride out on one side and then back on the other side. And people can sign up for as many of those segments as they want. They could sign up for one segment and divvy it up between five people, so everybody's just riding 10 miles. But that's how we kind of have parsed out the entire state. And we'll do it these multiple seasons. And on the website, we'll always have the next date that will be in action. And you can start signing up, and you can see a map that says what's been covered at the last time, what road segments are still open for sign up next time, and really just come up and pick your adventure. We'd love to have, you know, local people who are participating and riding the same segment every season for the next couple of years. That's, you know, an incredible window that and experience that they would have. Or they could be in Montana and go and hit a different part of the state every time. Or you could be somebody who just decides, like you said, pack up for a 10-hour road trip and come up to Montana from Park City and participate once, or do it seasonally, or do it twice a year with a team, or just you and a partner. There's really a lot of options open, and you can see all of that detail on the website, which you go to adventurescientist.org and navigate to it, or adventurescientist.org/roadkill. It'll take you right into this project.
And again, Andrew Howley from Adventure Scientists in Bozeman, Montana. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio. If you missed part of the show or you want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org. under the Shows tab.
We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcasts, so you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name.
So look for KPCW Cool Science Radio and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.